get it in gear to pull my life together. It's always a team effort. Baby steps. Baby steps. That's Amy Shark. I'm Blake Murphy. This is Jays Talk Plus. A baby step forward for the Blue Jays on Wednesday as they manage a series split with the league-leading Phillies. Came on the back of a terrific Chris Bassett performance, a rare ability for this team to string some hits together, get some hits with runners in scoring position, almost up and down the lineup. Everyone chipped in a little bit. They've got an off day today, return home, try to build on it against the Twins team that's been pretty hot. Yusei Kikuchi will take the hill in the opener of that one on Friday. Little bit of programming note here. The Toronto Maple Leafs fired Sheldon Keefe like half an hour ago. So you are listening to us on the alt stream or Sportsnet 360 on the main radio feed. There is coverage of that, of Sheldon Keefe being let go by the Leafs. We also won't have a show tomorrow because the Toronto Maple Leafs management group we'll be speaking to the media during our time slot. So we get a little long weekend, but we'll be back Monday to talk about, Kikuchi against Joe Ryan, Kevin Gausman against old friend Simeon Woods-Richardson, Alek Manoah against Bailey Ober on Sunday. I mentioned, Yusei Kikuchi will get the nod on Friday. You got a little bit more of a look into the life of Yusei Kikuchi last week when our next guest, Vivek Jacob, wrote about a day in the life of Yusei Kikuchi for Toronto Life. Vivek, who is a freelance writer for various outlets, including us here at Sportsnet and Toronto Life, he joins us now. V, what's going on, man? How are you? Oh, look at this. He's got the cricket shirt from last year and everything.
I do. I'm just excited to talk some cricket, excited to talk some baseball. It's going to be a fun night at the Dome tomorrow, so happy to be talking with you.
We will talk cricket night at the Dome tomorrow, Friday, May 10th, in a minute here, but I did want to talk to you about your Kikuchi piece. I know everyone's read it by now. The amount of people that texted me about this piece and how cool it was, we don't get a window into an athlete's like day-to-day life like that. I guess my first question is, how many hours are in a Yusei Kikuchi day? Because I have 24 hours in my day, and the way you laid it out, the way we know about Yusei Kikuchi's sleep habits, the amount he reads, works out, does English classes and stuff, he seems to be operating on a different clock than you and Ivy.
That man is just nonstop on the go all the time. I don't know how he does it. I don't know how he finds the energy. But apparently, it's a lot of that home cooking and his wife Rumi setting him up with a lot of great meals. He starts his day pretty early. He said that's one of the big changes he made, and starting at 6:37, cold showers. That's something I've adopted as well. So I could definitely relate to him on that, and not being a morning person and trying to turn that around. Then you get to the book reading. I couldn't process how he got to 258 books last year. Then he says he's already at 100 books this year. I don't know where you're at in terms of counting audiobooks, in terms of the books you've read, but I think he reads enough where you can kind of count the audiobooks as well. But you also love to see the effort he's making, in terms of trying to get ingratiated with the fans, learning English, putting in that effort, a couple hours a day with someone in Japan and an instructor in Japan. And so this man's day is packed every day, all day. And it's amazing the consistency that he's brought to his days. Then I feel like that's maybe reflecting on the field.
Yeah, I'm on book 17 so far this year, and I thought I was doing really good. And he's at 258 last year. So I don't do audiobooks. Maybe if you crank them up to like 1.5 speed, you can get through them a little bit more. Who knows? Maybe that's the next step for him. You talked to him a little bit about his English lessons and doing 90 minutes a day on Zoom with an instructor. Maybe an audiobook is the next step there. Also, shout out to Pi, a really good Thai restaurant that Kikuchi mentioned in that piece as well. So great work on that piece, V. In addition to freelancing for places like Sportsnet, Toronto Life, you also got a new gig coming up. You're going to be the beat reporter for Boundaries North, covering Canadian cricket at the international level. And pretty cool timing for this, because not only is it cricket night at Rogers Centre tomorrow, but the Cricket World Cup, the T20 World Cup, starts very soon. It's in the United States, and Canada is going to be participating this year. They made it. You're going to be covering it. How fired up are you for that?
I could not be more excited, man. This is going to be a surreal experience. So the first match of the World Cup is Canada versus US on June 1st. And so get your popcorn for that. It's going to be a really, really fun game. These are two teams that know each other well and have faced off a bunch of times. And so for this Canadian team to get that opportunity to play the first match of the tournament, and then they're also grouped with heavyweights like India and Pakistan, I think it's going to set things up really, really nicely. This is a dream opportunity for them. And it's been a long journey for some of them. There's a very experienced squad that is going to the World Cup. And so to have this reward that they've worked towards over the course of their primes and have a World Cup to play in, I'm super excited for them to get this opportunity.
If you are down at Rogers Center on Friday, you'll get to meet that team. Team Canada for the T20 Cricket World Cup will be at the game. The T20 World Cup trophy will be there. You can go see what it looks like. Those of you watching on TV can see V in last year's giveaway, a Toronto Blue Jays cricket jersey. This year, it's a white Jays cricket hat. Just looks like a regular bucket hat to me, but I don't know. It's unique to cricket, I guess. And V, look, we had you on last year ahead of Cricket Day. We also had the $1 million arm on. We'll call you the $1 million pen or something like that. And we discussed some of the similarities and overlaps in the two games, the different bowling styles and things like that. We won't rehash that this year because we did it last year. But for fans who are looking at this, hearing about this and saying, oh, they're in the World Cup, I would like to take a look. I would like to see what this is all about. What is kind of the entry level pitch on not just why to watch, because the World Cup is the World Cup, but on how to watch, how to tune in, and then what you're looking for when Canada takes the pitch?
Well, first off, in terms of how to watch, there is a channel called Willow TV that is available on Rogers that you can get, and it's about $5 a month. There's also the app version, so you can download that on your phone and watch it on there as well. If you're looking to learn a bit more about the game and experience it a little bit, if you head over to the ballpark tomorrow, you will be able to access cricket batting cages in section 536 and 537. Kids can head over to section 239 and design and decorate their own cricket bat, which I think is super cool. And so I think in terms of watching the World Cup, the T20 format of the game has become the most exciting format. And that's part of why it's making this big North American push right now. It gets done in about 3 hours. There's a lot of explosive hitting, a lot of home runs, if you will. And I think that's probably the biggest appeal of this format of the game.
Yeah, the Jays could use a little bit of that offense that we're hoping to see from Team Canada. V, before I let you go here, at the higher level here, we've seen this happen on the basketball side over the last generation or so, where, certainly at the individual talent level, yes, it's important to get guys into the NBA, get women into the WNBA and see that. But it's really been, the success of the international teams that has been the primary conversation and helped kind of push that next wave. We're seeing it now with the men's and women's on the basketball side. How important is getting to the World Cup and maybe even making some noise there for the continued growth of the sport here in Canada?
It's huge. It's absolutely massive. I think especially for kids growing up in this country, they want to see what a potential path looks like. They want to see an enticing path. And so getting into this World Cup, cricket has gotten into the Olympics for 2028. And so having an opportunity, having multiple opportunities like that to showcase yourself, showcase your skills at the highest level against the best teams in the world on a World Cup stage, I think that is something that is going to really appeal to kids who want to get into cricket and want to see some type of path going forward. And so I think that's probably the biggest thing.
And people will be able to read your coverage of it to get a little more knowledgeable about it as well. Beat reporter for Boundaries North covering Canadian cricket at the international level. Of course, Vivek M. Jacob on Twitter and Play in the V. I don't know if you're going to be, are you going to fire that account back up during the world? You haven't tweeted from there in a little bit. I need my spreadsheets.
It has been a minute. Okay. I've been juggling a few things, so it's been a bit tough, but we might have to crank it back up again.
All right. At least send me the spreadsheets. Vivek Jacob, freelance writer, Sportsnet, Toronto Life, Boundaries North for the Cricket World Cup later this summer. Thanks for taking the time, buddy.
Thanks so much for having me, Blake.
All right. That was Vivek Jacob. Again, it's Cricket Night down at the Rogers Center tomorrow. We talked about it last year when Cricket Night was coming up. V kind of explained to us the similarities and overlaps between the sports, where they differ. It's fascinating watching the pitching mechanics when you can bounce a ball in a bowl rather than pitching mechanics. Very cool. We also talked to the million-dollar arm last year, the cricket player who ended up in the Pirates system. And then in WWE, he's no longer there anymore. But cool to see those sports overlap, and very, very cool to look ahead to Canada in the T20 Cricket World Cup beginning in early June. Make sure you're following Vivek for that. And again, if you're down at Rogers Centre tomorrow, you can meet Team Canada. You can see the World Cup trophy. You can get a white cricket hat. Just a Jay's bucket hat is what it looks like to me, unless I'm missing something specific on it. And then, yeah, like V said, there are a lot of activations for both adults and kids. You know, take a swing with the bat, see how you do, design a bat as well. Should be a lot of fun. Also a lot of fun always. Let's talk to Ben Nicholson-Smith of Sportsnet, of sportsnet.ca. He is beside me now and for the rest of the show. How you doing, man?
Good. I also enjoyed Vivek's piece on Yusei Kikuchi. Such a cool look inside his life here in Toronto.
Yeah, and, you know, being a parent and a husband and a workout machine, but also wanting to work on, like, your personal things, like learning the language and things like that. Are you a cold shower guy too? Have you followed Yusei Kikuchi
No. I mean, I'm also impressed by his reading and just like packing a lunch. Like, this guy is very relatable.
Yeah, he's not eating the media meal four nights a week when the team's in town.
I got to be careful about that one.
Yeah, I mean, look, you're doing just fine. Okay, so let's talk baseball. That'll be fun down Friday at the park. It'll be Yusei Kikuchi against Joe Ryan. A fun matchup here with the Twins. Could have been heading into this weekend in a real bad way. They have an off day coming off a bad series. They get pasted in the first game against the Phillies. They have an off day today. Had they lost yesterday, would have been real heavy heading into the weekend. They do get a 5-3 win yesterday. A pretty team effort, especially on the hitter side. Good outing from Chris Bassitt. Romano gives up one, but it's you know, not too bad there. How do you feel? You know, this was, I know you weren't on the road, but we got the team meeting leaks and things like that. Where are you on the kind of day-to-day around this Blue Jays team right now?
Yeah, I mean, they're not in a good spot. Like, that road trip was not good. They lose 3 of 5, obviously. You know, there were some painful moments, I think, on that trip. And, you know, to win, I think, was really important. Bassitt, obviously, was really good. Just dealing the way that we've seen him deal and keep hitters off balance, he was on point yesterday, and they really needed that from him. None of the questions that we've talked about have gone away. They still have questions in the bullpen, and they still have questions offensively, and specifically at the top of that batting order. So at this point, you kind of play things out and see where things go. But man, it is it's a team that's really underperformed, and they've cost themselves already.
Yeah, it is. And you know, we don't want to oversimplify and look at a single stat, but something like, hey, you're dead last in home runs allowed, and you are fifth to last in home runs hit, is not a very helpful way. And home runs aren't everything, but they sure do go a long way. I know Nick Ashbourne had a piece early in the season that was kind of like, yeah, home runs aren't everything, but if you're losing the home run battle, you're in a tough spot to start these.
It's like literally the most important thing that you can do or give up.
Yes. So tough one there. But a small star forward yesterday, Chris Bassitt, throws all 8 of his pitches over the course of that game, threw all 8 of them at least 3 times. He gets Bryce Harper 3 times. He's one of the only guys who, especially from the right side, has really good career numbers against Bryce Harper. Bassitt's maybe not the best pitcher on this team, but it really has felt over his time here that he's kind of a leader in the pitching staff. For him to come out, and he had a pretty good outing the last time out as well, took a no-hitter into the 6th before things unraveled a little bit, and he got a little unfortunate in that Kansas City game. But do you get the sense that he kind of carries that, like, hey, we're in a bad spot, I'm very vocal when things are going poorly, I've got to be the guy to kind of lead this from the pitching side?
Yeah, I think there's an element of that. And I always appreciate, like, he's a pretty honest guy. Mm-hmm. And after his previous start, I was covering that game here in Toronto against the Royals, and it was clear how frustrated he was. And he said, I'm pissed. This is not the way that I want this to be going for the team and for himself. And, you know, that's the honesty that we appreciate from players. And I think that at this point in the season, you know, it stands to reason there's a lot of reason for frustration with this group. And that's just one part of it. When you look at, you know, Bassitt, who went into that start with a 5.45 ERA, the Jays need to be a lot better on a lot of different fronts. But Bassitt did nudge things forward yesterday.
And one of the things we saw, which has been rare for this team, not to just dust off last year's Jays Talk Plus episodes, but they haven't hit well with runners in scoring position, especially. The bigger problem this year probably has been not getting guys in runners in scoring position to begin with, but they go 5-for-14 with runners in scoring position yesterday. 7 different players in the lineup get hits, 8 of them reach base, everyone but Justin Turner, who I guess he had a fielder's choice that, but didn't reach base on his own accord. Up and down the lineup, David Schneider, 2 hits, Kevin Kiermaier, 3 hits, Vlad, 3 hits. They didn't hit the home runs we're talking about. They only had 2 extra base hits within those 14 base runners. But what do you see within that, particularly with Vlad coming through with 3 hits, a couple of them very hard hit?
Yeah, you really like to see that. I think it was a 113 and a 115 for Vladdy. Yeah. Those are steps in the right direction, especially after the Grand Slam on the weekend. He's kind of looking like himself, or at least a lot closer to it. The hard contact is there. His approach has been solid of late. So, you know, I think that he's in a reasonably good spot. The bigger questions, obviously, Bichette, stands to reason he'll come out of that. And then Springer, right? And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm sure we can get to what to do on those fronts. But, you know, I do wonder if this is the weekend where the Blue Jays make a change at leadoff. We've been wondering that for a while now. And I look at the numbers, I look at the results, and you do have better options at this point, like a Davis Schneider, for example, or even a Justin Turner to put at the top.
Yeah, and Davis Schneider, now that he's playing basically every day, you know, one of the arguments against it before would have been like, well, he's not playing every day, and then you've got to put someone out. You've got to change the batting order. And, you know, you could have done, I guess, Cavan against righties and Davis Schneider against lefties. But Schneider's in there every day now. Turner's cooled off a little bit, but you still like the long plate appearances and things like that. And you're right, there have to be better options. So right now, around baseball, there are 25 different players who have, we'll call them regular leadoff hitters. They've had more than half their team's plate appearances in the leadoff spot. Of those 25, George Springer ranks 23rd in OPS. Jonathan India, who hasn't spent a lot of time in that spot lately, and Xander Bogaerts, who is a very fascinating comparison to George Springer so far this year, are the only two with a lower OPS. I know we like to do this Jays history stuff, so I pulled some numbers on the worst leadoff stretches in Blue Jays history.
Oh, nice.
So this is, what did I put the cutoff at? Minimum 150 plate appearances in a season leading off for the Blue Jays. Where do you think George Springer ranks in OPS?
Out of how many?
From the bottom. Like how many how many places from last?
And how many seasons?
There are 72 qualified seasons, and George Springer has the best one in 2021. He had a 954 OPS as the leadoff hitter.
Wow.
So he has the very best one of these these 72 qualified leadoff seasons.
And I will say this year ranks 60th out of 72.
71st.
Wow.
The only, and again, he could come out of it, and, you know, this is on the shorter end of appearances and things like that. His 574 OPS is the second worst OPS ever for a Blue Jays leadoff hitter who's been given this much time in the spot.
And that tells you it right there, right? Normally when hitters don't perform at that level, then they're going to be bumped. They're not going to get chances in that spot. You need production out of that spot because it's the one that gets the most at-bats in a game.
Yeah. The only one that was worse was Alfredo Griffin in 1981. Now, first of all, in the 80s, what we thought of from a leadoff hitter was a little different. He was also coming off of a 1980 season where he was the leadoff hitter every single day.
Right.
He didn't perform particularly well, but
also, that was a bad team, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He also, in the leadoff spot the year before, he led off 150 games, only got on base at a 280 clip, and got thrown out on 23 of 39 stolen base attempts. I really don't know how you get to stay in the leadoff spot with a sub-300 OBP and you're getting thrown out more than you steal base. Like, even the conventional, well, he could slap hit and steal a base, wasn't there for him. But yeah, Alfredo Griffin, the only one at worst. And the only other one that's particularly close is Rajai Davis in 2012, who had a 582 OPS. He spent 45 games in the leadoff spot.
So, you know, I think essentially it's a reasonable time to make a move there. And it doesn't mean you can't move it back. That's the great thing about a batting order, is you can change it up. If George Springer goes off and has a good couple weeks and gets back to where he has been as an all-star hitter, you just move him back. So I think that the way David Schneider's hitting, that would be a totally reasonable option to put at leadoff and just see if you can score more as a collective.
And I should note as well that while George Springer is struggling at the plate, did contribute in a couple of big ways. Yesterday's game, stole a base that ended up being pretty pivotal because he came around to score, made a terrific diving catch in foul territory in right field with the bases loaded. Did score a run, but you know, you make that catch 100 times out of 100 to help your pitcher get out of a bases loaded jam, get an extra out on the board.
Yeah, exactly. And this is where, like, give George Springer credit. He's made some really good defensive plays. He leads the team in stolen bases. So these are good things. And no one is saying that he shouldn't play, right?
Right.
No one is saying that you have a better option in right field. He's your best option. He's an everyday player on this team. It's more a question of how do you get a little bit more offense? And I think that, you know, it'll be really interesting to see how the Jays set that lineup tomorrow.
Yeah, and John Schneider, rather, before yesterday's game, and speaking to Hazel May and Arden Zwelling, was asked about this. And look, we get some texts and some tweets in about, like, why doesn't anyone grill John Schneider about this? I think he has been asked about the batting order every single game I've been to this year. He gets asked about it regularly. The answers are just always the same. Yeah. So, you know, in this case, he kind of gave a lengthier answer yesterday, and it was, well, if the Jays are going to get going, I'm paraphrasing here, obviously, if the Jays are going to get going at some point, that will require Bo Bichette and George Springer to get going. So they are going to have patience with those guys. Now, they've obviously moved Bo down in the order. Maybe it's a case of they didn't want to move both of them down in the order because then you've got a couple holes at the top. But yeah, I think it would be reasonable to see George Springer lower in the order, David Schneider up higher, move past the times where Danny Jansen gets dropped below the six hole. Like, yeah. I think he should be in there. Like, I obviously there are complications with him DHing on his non-catching days, but he's got to be in there as much as they can possibly get him in there right now.
Yeah, I think he's a great cleanup option. I mean, he's someone who just gets around on fastballs and has the ability to get it in the air with some loft just down the line. We've seen this so consistently from Danny Jansen in the last few seasons now, right? When he's on the field, he's essentially a 30 homer bat, and that's really hard to come by in the major leagues, but specifically in this lineup, you just don't have a lot of players who consistently get the ball into the seats the way Danny Jansen does. So yeah, I would hit Danny Jansen cleanup at this point.
Yeah. And that would be, you know, then you're looking at, certainly against righties, Varsho's still hitting near the top of that lineup. And then you've got a Schneider, maybe Turner's the five, if you're not moving him higher up, because I think Vlad's going to stay in the 2-3 range
right now.
Okay. And then Bo Bichette moved down, which was the first button to press there. He hit as low as sixth yesterday. What did you make of that change? Similar thinking where, like, it was worth it to mix it. Obviously, and I've said this a couple times, Bo Bichette is not going to start hitting better because he's hitting sixth. But as a team, you got to try something a little different and maybe get him one fewer plate appearance here and there over the guys that are hitting a little better.
Yeah, I have no problem with that. Of course, like, same with Springer. You want him to get regular.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. If you're just joining us on Fan 590, that means you were listening to Bunkus talking about Sheldon Keefe being let go by the Toronto Maple Leafs. Big decisions for the local hockey club because things have not been living up to expectations during the peak window of their core. That kind of sounds familiar here on AJ's show. I am Blake Murphy. Ben Nicholson-Smith still alongside me in studio. Ben, we're not at the end of the season. We're not at the end of an 8-year run with the same core, but we are coming up on some difficult decision points for a Blue Jays team that is a couple games under 500. As you mentioned before the break, has seen their playoff odds dip to 25%, and however much stock you put into that, it is not close enough to being in a playoff spot right now. If you don't believe in those things, just go look at the standings. It will make you feel no better. The Jays have runway here. Obviously, you don't start. If you're going to change direction as a franchise, you're probably not making that decision in early May. You're making that in maybe early July. But there are big decisions ahead if things continue to go poorly. What is front of mind for you? And I love doing this stuff with you because you can take BNS out of MLB trade rumors, but we can't take the MLB trade rumors out of you. I know you love that kind of question and that part of the season.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that when you follow this stuff year over year, as you have, as I have for a really long time now, you just kind of understand that there's an ebb and flow to the season and that the season and the record will dictate what happens. Like, from that standpoint, it's not really that complicated what the Blue Jays are going to do, in my opinion. I mean, if they're above 500 at the end of July, they'll buy. Like, that's what they've done each of the last 4 years. They will do that again. That's plan A for them. And that seems unlikely and feels distant right now. And that's not good, but it's in play. So we'll see. Maybe they can get there. On the other hand, if they're below 500, let's say they're 47 and 53 at the end of July, you got to sell at that point. You have to reset for 2025. Maybe beyond, but at least for 2025 at that point in time, because, you know, if you're right now this week, they've been looking up at the Oakland A's in the standings and they're like at the, you know, the bottom, they have one of the worst run differentials in baseball, right? The Rockies and Marlins are the only teams that are worse than the Blue Jays. So they need to push things forward. If that doesn't happen, you have to understand and accept the reality in front of you, and you have to adjust and sell. And so to me, we'll get a lot more information in the next month or so about health, about record, and about underlying skill and performance. And then that will tell you what you need to do.
And I believe the number is 65% of players currently on the roster will be free agents at the end of this year or next. So if you're looking at guys who would, you know, guys who are in the final year of their deal and could be really attractive rentals around baseball, you say Kikuchi would be the tippy top of the starting pitching list, I would imagine. But you've also got guys like Justin Turner, Jimmy Garcia, Kevin Kiermaier as a extra outfielder type. Even Danny Jansen, if you don't feel comfortable about what extension talks look like or what his next contract talks look like, you do have a lot of guys. And there are two potential goals you would have if you were to, if you got to a point where you're going to sell at the deadline, there would be two potential goals. And one is, well, this core hasn't worked, this window hasn't worked, we're not super comfortable with the next Vlad and Bo deals, we got to look ahead.
Yeah.
The other would be a more Padres style quick retool. Yes, restock the farm system, but either get guys who are a little closer to the majors or get guys who you're comfortable then turning around and trading prospects in the offseason to take another kick at it. Would you have a lean in terms of which of those would make more sense? I think a lot of it probably comes down to the Vlad and Bo comfort.
Yeah, to me, I personally have a strong lean on this one, and it's that you stay competing for 2025. Like, it's one thing to say that 2024 isn't going to work out, but there are six teams per league that make the playoffs. This is still a team that has some good players. Giving up on next year to me seems entirely premature.
Gausman, Bassett, Berríos would all still be under contract unless you were to deal those guys too, and then you're talking big packages. Well, but you've got three-fifths of a really good rotation already locked down for 2025 in addition to Vlad, Bo, Kirk, Yariel, you know, the other pieces who are going to be around for
a bit. Exactly. And money coming off the books and prospects that, you know, have a chance to impact. We'll see how that looks. So, yeah, to me, it is not the time to give up on 2025. And further to that point, set aside what I think, you look at, you know, Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins, their position clearly has been that they want to win during this window. So this would be a big, big change in tone for them to say, yeah, we're going to blow it all up. I think also, you know, there are questions too. If they do decide to sell, who's going to be doing that selling?
Yes.
You know, that's the obvious one. But we're not at that point right now. So I don't think that, you know, anything's imminent as far as structurally changing things, with the leadership of this team. But yeah, if things continue going down a bad path, anything's on the table.
And I think the leadership question would have to come even before the sell question because, you know, look, there are enough cooks in the kitchen that the draft doesn't run through, say, Ross Atkins unilaterally. But yeah, you want to start considering those things ahead of transaction season. And if, you know, if one person who did one mini tear down and built it back up is, if you're deciding that that person is maybe, if you're not 100% that that person is also going to be leading the charge in the winter when you retool for 2025, probably doesn't make a lot of sense for that person to be leading that sell off in 2024.
Right. And I think there's a tendency, like at this point in the season, to want some sort of answers, right? Because we've seen the Blue Jays struggle so much and, you know, they haven't had a satisfying season in really any way. But so it's hard to be patient in that scenario, but I think it's the path that they have to take for the next month or so, because let's say you do decide to sell, you're not going to get way more now than you would at the end of July anyway. Like, it's not like there's some huge, you know, market to be found right there. There's a reason that most trades take place in July. So you can get a really good return still if you decide to do it then. So at this point, you can play it out. You can gather more information. You can give yourself a chance to have that really good season that you're hoping for, understanding it's less likely than it was. See if that plays out. And if it doesn't, all right, you've got to reset.
Yeah, and look, I'm a proponent of teams should be a little bit more aggressive buying earlier, like the Padres just did with Luis Arraez. Like, you know you have a need. You know you're going to trade some prospects for a guy. Why wait? Why lose two extra months of that guy? But if you're the Blue Jays and you're in a situation where you're not sure, you know, they've got a 13-game stretch coming up where they play the White Sox, the Tigers, the White Sox, and the Pirates or something like that. I might have the order mixed up. And I'm not saying that you should be more convinced about this team's chances if they go 13-0 against four pretty bad teams, Paul Skeens and Jared Jones aside. But if that fundamentally changes, like if you hold water and go 500 until then, and then suddenly you're a couple games over 500. Like, you, a team in the Jays position is going to give themselves more of a chance than a team in, say, the White Sox position or the Marlins position is going to give themselves, because they know already.
Yeah, exactly. For the Jays, they actually don't know, which that's bad when you zoom out, because going into the season, we thought we knew. We thought this was a team that would be buying. It was a question of direction or scale, or, you know, we thought that they would be buying something. And it's not a team without needs, right? They need relievers. They could use a second baseman, third baseman, or left fielder, some sort of bat to add to this lineup. So they obviously have needs. They potentially have prospects to deal for those needs, but you can't justify doing that if this team continues underperforming. So you have to kind of look under the hood on the one hand. And then the record too. I mean, it's so basic in today's era of, you know, so much information and so many analytics, but end of the day, the record really does determine a lot of this stuff. So the Jays do need to bank some wins. They need to get to 500 is step one. And if they don't do that, then you can't justify adding to this team.
Yeah, I mean, look, the standing, we can look at any metric you want, but you're right. The standings are going to dictate things. And there are situations that are strange, like 2015, where they were a 500 team and every single thing we could look at was like, they're way better than yeah. this. It's going to happen. Yeah. But also there are years where, like last year's Padres, were the same kind of thing. They yep. hovered a little below 500 and they had this huge run differential and it just wasn't clicking. And sometimes you run out of time with that. But the record is what it is. And it's funny too, like I tweeted a thing the other day about their Pythagorean expected win loss, which is like a victim of very poor branding. Like anytime we're dusting off Pythagoras, people who do not like numbers are going to be like, get me out of here. But all that really is like a way of putting it into a record that it's better to outscore your opponents by more than get the brakes beaten off. Like, basically, you can win a bunch of 3-2 games, and that's helpful, and it says something about your bullpen and your ability to win close games and stuff like that. If you're losing 10-1 regularly, that tells us a lot of something, too, that you're not competitive enough against good teams. So, the minus 44 right now in the run differential column is as notable, if not more notable, even than the 17-20, and looking up at 12 teams in the American League East?
Yeah, it's too much. It's too much. And so, you know, this is where the Jays do have a little bit of time to turn things around. The players on that team obviously entered this season with a lot of expectations. And they still have a chance in the course of the next, let's say, month plus to change the tenor there. But yeah, you don't have infinite time. They've kind of wasted 37 games, right? Yeah. They could have made some gains. Instead, they put themselves behind. So you have to make the most of the next 37 or else the path will be clear and it won't be a fun one for 2024.
Yeah, you can't do the spin of, well, they got all their cold streaks out of the way already and everyone's no. just going to be hot from here. Okay, so they'll have a chance this weekend to try to build something, try to get something going ahead of a very tough series next week with Baltimore and Tampa Bay's here. And I joked yesterday, Tampa Bay could be 0-159 and the Jays are still not going to be comfortable seeing Tampa come to town. So this Minnesota series, it's a Minnesota team that is quite good. They recently had a 12-game winning streak. The vibes seem very good there with the sausage and everything like that. But it's a Minnesota Twins team that on paper is not that great. They're an AL Central team that's, you know, only a little above 500. They're a team that we saw them in the playoffs last year. They're interesting. They have a very good rotation and a pretty good bullpen. But they're kind of built like the Jays were expected to be built, where, yeah, there are a lot of questions about the offense around that. What are your overall impressions of this Twins team, acknowledging that, yeah, this is also the Twins team that bounced the Blue Jays last year?
Yeah, good team. You know, they'd be better with Royce Lewis in. It looks like, you know, the Jays sort of catch a break timing-wise that he's not in there at this point in the season. They can hit a little bit, more than I would have expected, even despite, you know, Buxton being off to a slow start. But Kepler's been really hot. Jeffers has been great. So they have a good team. I don't think it's a great team, but I think it's a good team. It's a team that definitely should be competing for a playoff spot. It'll be a challenge for the Jays.
And it'll be a challenge it's a challenge for the Jays anyway, but a particular challenge for Alek Manoah on Sunday. I know this is Thursday, but we don't have a show tomorrow. So I wanted to mention that because the Twins are lefty heavy at the top of the lineup. So you think about what a team's going to do against Alek Manoah, and you're probably going to see a lot of lefties in there. Whether or not that slider is biting enough to the back foot against lefties will probably determine how far Manoah goes in that game. They have, toward the top of their lineup, Edouard Julien, Canadian kid who has a 119 OPS plus against righties. Trevor Larnach has a 180 against righties. That's a small sample. They don't play him a ton, but he's on that side of the platoon and has really strong platoon splits. Max Kepler always kills righties. Alex Kirilov has not hit them well this year, but historically hits them really well. Now they also have two switch hitters who will be in there, and Willie Castro and Carlos Santana, although those guys both historically hit lefties better than righties, but they'll have six guys hitting from the left side against Alek Manoah. What are you looking for from Manoah on Sunday, coming off of a re-debut that had more negative than positive in my mind?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I do think it's good the Jays debuted him. I think it's good that they got him back in there, and the time was right to try that for a lot of different reasons. Now, I agree it wasn't the performance that you would hope for, and I think particularly with the strike throwing. End of the day for me, and this is from talking to people with other teams, scouts from other teams, about Alek Manoah and what they see from him, they want to see athletic delivery down the mound, right? You want to see someone who's pushing toward home plate with everything that he has in alignment in that direction toward home plate. And didn't really happen in that start. There's obviously, you know, getting that delivery right has been an ongoing challenge for the Blue Jays this year. And to the extent that he can do that, that will help him throw strikes, be ahead in counts, have better results. So again, in talking to scouts from other teams, the question right now is, can Manoah repeat the delivery to the point that he is throwing strikes athletically on a consistent basis?
And the strike part, you know, the slider looked okay in the debut. It looked really good in his last AAA start, but the inability to spot that fastball in big spots is a tough one there as well. On the other side of this series, so we'll see with Manoah. I wouldn't even say cautiously optimistic. I am ready for that to be a rough one. Hopefully I am wrong. Hopefully there's enough to build off with the slider, with, you know, his comments after the game, that I actually feel like I can attack a little bit more and be okay.
And look, the Jays have a great defense. Maybe this is a day you trust your defense, right? As long as you're ahead in counts, you're not walking guys, you're not setting up big innings in that way, try it. See what happens and let the defenders help him out.
Yeah, the four walks and a hit by a pitch, you're not doing yourself any favors in that one. On the other side, this is the team that pitches really well. Fun bullpen, Johan Duran and his Undertaker entrance. He won't get to do that in Toronto, obviously, but he will tombstone you if you're in a late game and he comes in. Griffin Jacks has been really good back there. Cole Sands, they have a good bullpen. We are missing Pablo Lopez and Chris Paddock, who has been striking out everyone over his last couple starts, finally starting to deliver on some of the promise that was there. But even then, we'll see three pretty good starters in Joe Ryan, Simeon Woods-Richardson, and the giant Bailey Ober, who go hoop. If you're 6 foot, I've said this about guys before. I said that about Glasnow. If you're that big and that athletic, go be a power forward. You don't need to be 6'10" falling down the mound at guys. I wanted to ask you about Simeon Woods-Richardson, because I'd imagine he'll be a talking point on Saturday, because he's a guy that the Blue Jays traded away. If anyone doesn't remember, Simeon Woods-Richardson was part of the return for Marcus Stroman in 2019. The Jays traded Marcus Stroman away with 1.5 years left of control for Anthony Kay, who they eventually lost on waivers and is now in the minor leagues in Japan, and Simeon Woods-Richardson. 2 summers later, they turn around and trade Simeon Woods-Richardson along with Austin Martin for 1.5 years of control of Jose Berríos. They've obviously extended Berríos. Berríos has been very good. Austin Martin, by the way, is a bench regular for the Twins. He just came back up from the minors. He's been playing second base, left field, and center field, just kind of as a utility piece, kind of in the Ernie Clement role,
right,
for them. Revisiting this trade, Jose Berríos has obviously been very, very good. Simeon Woods-Richardson was a guy who ranked as high as number 61 on prospect list at some point, and then fell off after the trade in 2021. The next prospect update didn't even have him in the top 100. What have you made of him kind of figuring it out here a little bit for the Twins? Took a while.
Yeah, off to a great start here. He's striking out more than a batter per inning, ERA under 2. He's throwing 93-mile-an-hour fastball, so it's not overpowering. I sort of wonder if there is like an adjustment that teams will make on him, because you don't tend to see guys who throw 93 succeed unless they have, you know, the kind of Chris Bassett pitch ability that is really tough to replicate. So, you know, we'll see. I'm intrigued to see him. To me, it doesn't change the outlook of that trade. I think that, you know, when the Blue Jays have made some of those big swings to buy, you know, whether it's Berríos, whether it's Matt Chapman, I think it's worked out pretty well for them. And of course, there's the, you know, everyone has the Varsho Moreno trade in mind. We'll see where that one goes. You know, you could make your case on either side. It's an ongoing discussion there. But I think the Berríos trade is a win. I think that's, you know, a good one for the Jays, you know, obviously notwithstanding a start against the Phillies this week, but that doesn't change the fact that that's been a good trade.
It's kind of what you hope for, right? And it's kind of the type of trade you'd like to have in mind. Like both ends of the Simeon Woods-Richardson trade worked out for Toronto, right? Like, okay, things aren't working well. You're not in a competitive window. Marcus Stroman was not happy about how that got handled at the time of his trade. He almost bowled me over leaving the Rogers Center that day. I don't know if you were there
you
that day, but
both,
the clubhouse was closed and we weren't allowed in afterward.
Closed, but not quiet.
Yes.
There was a lot going on in the clubhouse that day. And there were some loud discussions.
Yeah. And then he almost physically ran me over. But from the Jays' perspective, you got Anthony Kay didn't become anything really, but you got a prospect who you could then, when you were back in a competitive window, turn around and trade him for effective help. And if you're the Twins, it's worked out well as well. Jose Berríos was coming up on an extension that you weren't going to sign him to. You use that money for Pablo Lopez. Simeon Woods-Richardson eventually grows into your rotation. It's pretty win-win.
Yeah, you know, and for the Jays, like, they made some good trades, all the way dating back to acquiring Teoscar Hernandez for Francisco Liriano. You know, they made some good trades. They made some good free agent signings. But end of the day, it's about wins and losses. It's about the team you have on the field, right? So we can look and academically break this stuff down. But the team in front of us right now is not good enough, has not been good enough. Yeah. They're not in the particularly good position. So maybe that can change. Maybe they can get themselves into a better position and justify buying, and it'll all be on track. But, you know, if it doesn't, then the record will inform what has to happen here.
Yeah, and it is interesting that they've done some good trades, they've made some good free agent signings, and they still feel far away. And part of that is, you know, I don't think it's a coincidence that Simeon Woods-Richardson, the one prospect they've traded away who has actually ended up pretty good, was someone they acquired in trade, didn't draft and develop themselves. Obviously, you know, the High Performance Center gets spoken highly of. They think long-term that that's going to make a positive impact on those things. But the homegrown, we'll see with Aralvis and Addison Barger and a couple other guys there. But certainly on the pitching side, there is not a Simeon Woods-Richardson coming. And that's been, you know, if you were going to line up, okay, well, draft and develop, free agency trades, the one area that the Jays have fallen short is the ability to kind of restock things internally.
That's right. And that's a big category. That's super important in Major League Baseball.
Unless you're going to be unless you're going to be the number one spending team, but you know who always has a really good farm system? The Los Angeles Dodgers. So you can somehow do both.
Yeah. And the Dodgers also trade to win, you know, because the Jays people would say, well, we traded so many of our good prospects.
42 years of control on the way in, 42 years of control on the way out.
And so that would be the argument. But look, end of the day, we can discuss this stuff and split hairs on it, but the record shows us, the team on the field shows us, they're not playing well right now, so they have a lot of work to do.
Okay, we've got 2 minutes left before we're done for the week. Paul Skeens is going to make his debut on the weekend. Jared Jones has been awesome for the Pirates. We won't see the Pirates for a little bit yet, end of May, but just as a baseball fan, how excited are you to get a look at the pretty much unquestioned top pitching prospect in the game?
Yeah, no question. Skeens is, he's a monster. I mean, he's throwing 101, sitting 101, huge velo. He's in the zone too. I mean, you talk about repeatability and athleticism, right? This is a guy who's in the strike zone consistently and attacking hitters. I mean, this is, you know, I don't want to put a Strasburg sort of excitement level comparison here. I don't think it's quite there, but it's maybe a half step removed or one step removed from the Strasburg level. And he's got a huge amount of potential to become, you know, is it a Giolito, Gosman, Garrett Cole? You think about the best college starting pitchers drafted. This is the kind of path that Skeens is on. So we'll see where he lands, how long it takes. It might not be immediate, but, you know, facing the Cubs this weekend, I think we'll see 8 or 9 strikeouts, probably 5 innings, something like that.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. Hopefully it is as fun at the Rogers Center. Kikuchi against Joe Ryan, Kevin Gausman against Simeon Woods-Richardson, Alek Manoah against Bailey Ober. No Jays Talk Plus tomorrow because Leafs end of season management availabilities. Jeff Merrick will be on with you starting at 10:28 to carry you through all of that. We won't be back until Monday to break down this series and set up a big series against the Orioles. Ben Nicholson-Smith, thanks for doing this, buddy.
My pleasure.
Thank you also to Vivek Jacob. Make sure you check out his work on Canada in the Cricket World Cup as that comes up as well. Thank you to Amit Mann, Lance Kennedy, Jake Schultz, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass as well. Jeff Merrick Show coming up. Blair and Barker in their usual 2-4 spot for you. And no Jays Talk Plus tomorrow, so a little early. Hope you all have a wonderful weekend and get to see a couple of Blue Jays victories. Have a good one, guys.